It's Friday, February 3rd, and this is your WFYI Weekly News Roundup. I'm Taylor Bennett. Hundreds of people rallied at the Indianapolis International Airport to support refugees and immigrants that are temporarily banned from entering the country. As WFYI's Drew Donnellan reports, many who attended are anxious about what comes next.
Hannah Omar was born and raised in New York and lives in Columbus, Indiana. But her parents are from Yemen, one of seven countries whose citizens are temporarily banned from entering the U.S. Omar was joined at the rally by family and friends, but one relative who couldn't make it might be affected by the ban. As Omar explains, her relative is planning to bring his wife here from Yemen on February 1st.
And now we don't know. We don't know if he will be able to bring her here. They have a baby boy who's an American citizen, so now he's in limbo.
Many at the airport rally echo Omar's concern for people affected by the ban, including speakers from the ACLU, local faith groups, the Democratic Party, and a group that helps refugees resettle in Indiana.
To shut the door, to slam the door, in fact, on refugees and other entrants is just completely un-American.
That's Cole Varga, executive director of Exodus Refugee Immigration. He says they've been calling settled refugees in the state, giving them the best advice they can offer.
There's still a lot of uncertainty here in the next couple of weeks with what this actually means.
The Indianapolis airport rally was one of several protests held in the state this weekend. For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Drew Dudlin.
The city wants to build the new long-discussed Marion County Jail where the Citizens Energy Coke plant once stood. Local residents hope to leverage the project for economic growth. Indianapolis Mayor Joe Hogsett's vision is bigger than just a jail. He calls it a community justice campus.
On December the 12th, I outlined a specific plan that this administration was intent on pursuing to reform the entire Marion County criminal justice system. Today, we reach a key milestone in the implementation of that plan, the place where our systemic reforms will take root.
The site, southeast of downtown Indianapolis, would also host a mental health center that complements the mayor's recently unveiled plan for criminal justice reform.
We considered many potential locations that met the relevant criteria, something centrally located. I could see the skyline of Indianapolis from where I stand. Something large enough to encompass the scope of our reforms, and something that the community supports. The former Citizens Coke plant meets each of those criteria. Here, we will ensure two things. First, that justice is served. And second, that those who are in need of our help will receive it.
The Twin Air neighborhood has suffered since the Coke plant closed in 2007, and the city wants the project to attract new businesses and job opportunities.
What we build here will change more than lives. It will change the very life and the very history of this part of our community. I understand that this site carries with it its share of challenges. The community members and leaders who tirelessly advocated for this location have every right to be gratified at the news of this selection and should be thanked for their years of oftentimes thankless work.
Jeff Sparks is the chairman of a neighborhood committee.
I think we're going to see, once this opens in 3 years or so, that this neighborhood is going to become vibrant again. You know, a lot of people don't realize back in the 50s, the Twin Air Shopping Center was the first shopping center built in the city. And right next to it was the Twin Air Drive-In. Right in front of the Twin Air Drive-In was a bowling alley that people still talk about today. And then over to the other side was the Satellite Hamburger Joint. So in the mid-50s, this was a hopping, happening place. And then all the stuff started happening. The school closed, the Coke plant closed, and people started getting very discouraged. So it's exciting to see that finally this neighborhood, who's hung in there, there are people that have lived here since the 50s, they've hung in here, they believe in their neighborhood, are finally going to get that old life back. You know, one of the things that we hope in this city, they don't want to be another Fountain Square. They want to be a home for the working service class folk. And I know I want to walk alongside them to keep everyone as best we can from this becoming another, we've priced the working service class out of a home. We want to keep them here and at the same time have a vibrant community. I think it's doable. And the reason I have hope is because of the collaboration that's already gone on to get this done. The only way you're going to do it is through bringing everyone together.
This is the weekly news roundup on 90.1 WFYI. I am Taylor Bennett. Indiana has one of the nation's highest smoking rates. The House Public Health Committee voted on a bill this week that aims to bring that rate down, in part by raising the cigarette tax by $1.50.
Before the committee meeting, Nancy Cripe was spending the day at the State House to convince lawmakers to vote for the bill. She met with a few of them, and she said her job was pretty easy.
So far, everyone that I've talked to has been supportive of raising the tobacco tax, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Cripe is the coordinator for tobacco-free Allen County, and this cause is personal for her. She says her sister smokes, which caused her to develop macular degeneration.
She's going blind. She cannot talk, even on the phone to me, without starting to cough after about one full sentence, and still swears to me up and down she enjoys smoking.
Cripe says that's the addicted brain talking. She hopes a tax increase would make her sister quit and keep other people from smoking too. Studies show that raising the cigarette tax can keep people from buying that first pack. The bill would also raise the smoking age to 21 and put $35 million toward tobacco prevention and cessation each year. Right now, the state spends under $6 million.
So we need that money to be investing in, you know, preventing our kids from using and helping people to quit.
The bill cleared the House Public Health Committee 11-0. Jake Harper, Side Effects Public Media.
A crews are working on the final demolition phase of the Rockville Road Bridge over I-465. Indiana Department of Transportation spokesman Nathan Riggs says that the site is being prepared for new beams and rebuilding.
Reith Riley Construction, that's the company that we're going to have finished the work. They did the initial demolition, securing the structure, removing the damaged bridge beams over northbound I-465, basically cleaning up the existing parts of the bridge deck that need to be removed to begin reconstruction of that section of the bridge deck. We're still on the fast track. We're trying to get this bridge rebuilt. We thank the public's motorists for their patience. Hopefully they understand the situation, but we are moving as quickly as possible, but we are limited. It does take some time to create these bridge beams. You know, they're 125 feet long, 70 tons. It's not something you can just go out and get and start right away.
Now, no traffic restrictions are expected in I-465 in the final stage of construction, but crews will be on site for a while.
Fortunately, we were able to get northbound I-465 back open. Rockville Road, unfortunately, because of the damage to the bridge, has to be in this temporary configuration. Westbound traffic not impacted as much. It's basically in the same configuration as it was before. Eastbound, however, is limited to one lane across the bridge, and so especially during those morning hours, traffic flow is pretty restricted. Once we have the bridge beams on site, we'll be setting those into place, and once we get the beams on site, we'll have a better idea of how long it's going to take to rebuild, basically, the remaining part of the bridge deck. So that's really driving the project timeline at this point. And once we can get those procured, we'll have a better idea of when we can reopen Rockville Road to normal traffic flow.
A truck driver hit the bridge earlier this month. No one was seriously injured, but the bridge did suffer significant damage. On the last day of enrollment for the Affordable Care Act, a few dozen people turned out at the State House this week to argue for saving it. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports, the rally was part of a national Save My Care bus tour sponsored by proponents of the landmark health care law.
Former U.S. Congressman Barron Hill voted for the ACA in 2010 and says Republicans who now want to replace the law can't keep its popular parts without keeping the requirement that everyone buy insurance.
Pre-existing conditions, they need to keep that, or whether your children can stay on your policy until you're 26. But ladies and gentlemen, that all goes away if you do away with the mandate, and they're going to do away with the mandate. The mandate is the glue that keeps it together.
Among the Republican replacement ideas is the health savings account. Dominic Dorsey, the president of the local social justice group Don't Sleep, says that's unacceptable.
So the big plan is to have underpaid, underemployed, underserved individuals pay for their own health care coverage when they're already underinsured.
The rally ended with a mock funeral procession to U.S. Senator Todd Young's office, symbolizing the hundreds of Hoosiers the group estimates would die each year if their Medicaid coverage ended. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
What do you wonder about Indianapolis?
Why did Pogues Run get buried underground?
Why are there so many potholes?
Who's in charge of synchronizing all the stoplights in town?
With Curious Indy, you can ask questions and help WFYI News decide what we should be reporting on next, and sometimes even be part of finding the answer. So, Curious Indy? Go to wfyi.org/curiousindy to find out more.
This is the Weekly News Roundup on 90.1 WFYI. I'm Taylor Bennett. A jury returned a guilty verdict against Mark Leonard for the March 2013 murder-for-hire plan targeting a key witness in the Richmond Hill explosion case. Leonard was found guilty of conspiracy to commit murder. Prosecutors say while being held on murder charges for the 2012 case, Leonard attempted to arrange the murder of a personal associate and witness in the case. Leonard was convicted in 2015 and is currently serving two life without parole sentences for his role in the Richmond Hill explosion. Leonard is scheduled to be sentenced February 8th. A lawsuit targeting three of the world's top insulin manufacturers, including Indianapolis-based Eli Lilly, has been filed in federal court.
The plaintiffs accused Lilly and two other companies of artificially raising baseline prices even though the cost of producing insulin hasn't gone up. Lilly's insulin now costs $255 per vial, twice as much as 5 years ago. Lawyer Steve Berman, who represents the plaintiffs, blames the skyrocketing prices on a murky pharmaceutical market in which drug producers are rewarded for keeping their prices high instead of cutting prices as in traditional competitive markets. The problem, he says, stems from deals between health insurers, pharmacy companies, and pharmacy benefit managers who broker deals between the two. By raising insulin's baseline price and then offering insurers a steep discount through the middlemen, the complaint alleges manufacturers can curry favor with the benefits managers by offering them a larger cut of the spread between those costs. The result, Berman says, is prices that keep going higher, harming diabetes patients dealing with increasingly popular high-deductible insurance plans.
So there's an arms race, so to speak, for each of these companies to raise their list price once someone else raises.
In a statement, Lilly insists it hasn't broken the law but declined to offer any further comments. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Sarah Fentum.
Indy 11 will be pursuing one of four Major League Soccer spots. Indy 11 President Jeff Belkus.
Well, Major League Soccer is becoming very popular in this country and continues to grow, continues to expand. The Indy 11 has been participating as a part of the North American Soccer League, or the NASL, which is a Division II league. Our ownership from the beginning, or Saul Ozdemir is our owner, has said that he and Indy 11 want to compete at the highest level of soccer in the United States, and that would be Division I soccer. So it amounts to bringing another professional sports franchise to the city of Indianapolis. So it's a very big deal and very important to us, and will be important to this community and to our soccer fans here in Indianapolis and the state of Indiana.
He feels good about the team's chances.
We have good fan support here in Indianapolis. One of the advantages we have is the success of the Indy 11 over the last three seasons. And soccer has been very well received here. Our attendance has been league-leading in our NASL league. And we've demonstrated that Indianapolis will be a good market for professional soccer.
Indy will become the 12th city hoping to enter the league. A final decision is expected later this year. The application reportedly will include a plan for a downtown stadium that would be built between Lucas Oil Stadium and the White River as part of a public-private partnership. The Oscar-nominated film La La Land is coming to the big screen in Indianapolis, literally. The film will have a seven-day run at the IMAX Theater in downtown Indianapolis starting tonight. IMAX manager Craig Mintz says the experience of seeing the highly acclaimed musical on a six-story screen with surround sound will be like no other.
The color saturation, the light levels, the the music that they sing and play during the film really needs to be experienced, and it needs to be seen in a fashion that really kind of pulls you in. IMAX gives you that opportunity.
IMAX has had a very successful showing of the newest Star Wars film, Rogue One, and Mintz expects to see more films that usually only make it to traditional screens find a new home in IMAX.
From time to time, you're going to see some non-comic book superhero, you know, space galactic war films playing an IMAX screen, and that's okay, because there's a lot of content out there, and some of it needs to be seen on an IMAX.
La La Land at the IMAX downtown runs through next Thursday. This is the weekly news roundup on WFYI. A library can play a vital role in any community. As part of this milestone year that commemorates Central Library's 100 years of service, Indianapolis Public Library CEO Jackie Needis will speak with residents about the role of Central Library and also highlight new initiatives during her Love Your Library tour at all locations.
This is something I've done every February since I came back to the public library in 2012, and it's a series of focus groups in each of our public service locations where we invite the community to come in, discuss the library with me, give me their feedback on particular questions, and it gives me a chance to explain some of our upcoming activities and answer their questions about those activities. We are celebrating 100 years of Central Library. The Paul Cray building, the older building in the front, opened 100 years ago. And we're also now celebrating the fact that the whole combined buildings have been open since 2007. We've learned a lot about how the public wants to use them, and we're going to be reimagining a number of the spaces to better correspond with the new uses and the new patterns of our patrons. All are welcome. I have plenty of cookies for however many people come. And if you just check the website or your local branch library, you can check the time and the date that I'll be there. And truthfully, just come and be prepared to have a good, healthy discussion about the future of Central Library and how you can really be part of that.
She says a library can offer so much more than just renting a book.
The community has very different needs. Some people still want to come and get that book. A lot of people need a place to hide out, that third place that they can go study or get away from the busyness of home or work. There's people who want to meet in small groups and maybe work on a project or something together. And there's people who want to bring their children to some place where there are free, constructive, positive activities that they can share together as a family. So right there, I've described five different users coming to our buildings.
What is going on with the rest of the branches?
Southport and Warren were just recently renovated, and East Washington will be reopening in February, and that's going to be very exciting. I think the East Side folks are going to be thrilled when they see all the tutoring spaces and the computer lab, things like that, that are really going to help that East Washington community. And we're well underway to plan for the new Michigan Road Branch Library, so kind of an exciting time for the branches as well as Central.
The tour starts this month and runs through March 7th. Indianapolis Colts punter Pat McAfee says he is retiring. The 29-year-old two-time Pro Bowl pick made the announcement in a statement on Twitter this week, thanking fans for their support over the last seven seasons. He made the announcement also during an appearance on the Comedy Central sports show Barstool Rundown.
I'm joining the most powerful force in entertainment and media, and I can't wait to be a full-time staff member of Barstool Sports.
He also says three knee surgeries in 4 years, the expectation of additional operations in the future, and also that enticing offer to work for Barstool Sports convinced him to walk away despite having 2 years and nearly $6 million remaining on his contract. A House committee approved a bill this week that would provide money to exonerated prisoners. Its proponents expect, though, they will need to revise it to keep it moving forward.
Republican Representative Greg Stuart-Wald's bill would create a fund to pay each exonerated person $25,000 for every year spent behind bars. Stuart-Wald says the state currently does more for guilty convicts leaving prison than it does for the innocent.
Innocent people who are let out of DOC because of an exoneration issue
We have no means, nothing in statute, to provide any services for them whatsoever.
Stuart acknowledges that his bill needs changes. Attorney Amol Sinha from the Innocence Project points out that the bill only provides money for those exonerated by DNA evidence. He says of the 23 people exonerated in Indiana since 1989, 14 were freed through non-DNA evidence.
We'd be excluding them from relief, which seems to me inherently unfair.
Sinha also wants the compensation raised, suggesting $50,000, roughly Indiana's median income. Stuart says he views his $25,000 amount as a starting point. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
More from the State House coming up on The Lawmakers next. You've been listening to the WFYI Weekly News Roundup. I'm Taylor Bennett.